Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the new tax benefits for owners presented by Thoroughbred Owners of California. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, participants are asked to press star 1 to register for a question. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Mr. Jim Mulvihill. Please go ahead, sir.
All right. Thank you, Lisa, and thanks, everyone, for joining us this afternoon. We're here today to help you understand the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, as it's officially titled. That's the federal tax overhaul that was passed in December. And more specifically, we're going to talk about what it means for horse owners and breeders, as well as trainers and horse players, basically the impact on the entire industry, specifically those of you that are on the call today. This call is presented in partnership between the TOC and the NTRA, and we're glad to be joined by the leaders of both organizations, as well as the lobbyists and tax experts that we rely on in Washington, D.C., and who have worked on behalf of Thoroughbred Racing for many years now. We've got four great speakers lined up, and then after their remarks, we're going to open it up for questions from all of you. So with that, to kick it off, I'd like to introduce our first speaker, and that's the president and CEO of the TOC, Mr. Greg Avioli. Greg, go ahead.
And Greg's line just disconnected. We're attempting to reach out to him now.
All right. If everyone can just sit tight for a couple minutes, we'll try and reconnect with Greg. He did have some opening remarks that that he wanted to give just to welcome everybody onto the call. So we'll give just a second to see if we can reconnect with Greg. If not,
and Greg has returned.
Thank you.
All right, Greg, the floor is yours.
Yeah, well, I appreciate everyone joining us. I have been affiliated with the NTRA for 20 years. I think one of the best things that they do is provide legislative advocacy for the industry in Washington. The TOC is a proud member of the NTRA, and we very much appreciate Commissioner Alex Waltrip and Greg Means giving our membership the opportunity to hear firsthand about the tax bill and hopefully ask a few questions as well. So thanks, everyone, and thank you guys.
All right. Thanks, Greg. And with that, let's bring in Alex Waltrip. Alex is the president and CEO of the NTRA. Alex, go ahead.
Greg, thank you very much for inviting us to be with your membership today. We're more than happy to provide you some insight into what happened at the end of the year last year, that tax changes that will have far-reaching impacts on our industry. And fortunately, today we're able to bring two people to this call, two people who are important to the horse industry, Greg Means, who is the lead lobbyist for the Alpine Group, who's headquartered in Washington, D.C., and Lauren Basil, who works closely with Greg and has been part of the NTRA team now for a couple of years. They are or should be known to you as the architects, the quarterbacks, if you will, of the most recent changes that we received from Treasury Department on withholding and reporting of winning parimutuel wagers. They helped us craft the strategy for working not legislatively but through the regulatory approach to achieve what in essence was a 98% of what we've been looking for many years, which is relief from the undue burden of reporting and withholding winning parimutuel wagers. And so congratulations to Greg and Lauren. We thank you for that work. Now it's on. Lauren, in particular, has done a lot of work on the specifics of this new tax law. I want to ask Greg, however, to speak first to some of the overarching themes and principles that guided us as we represented the industry over the last weeks and months, because it was a long process, and we were there every day. I just would remind everybody that the information we're going to provide to you is not comprehensive in all respects of the tax bill. We urge you to consult your own tax advisor for information and decisions specifically applicable to your situation, which we are not equipped to answer today. We're going to give you broad details. We're going to give you things to talk about with your advisor, but ultimately we hope you'll plan with your advisor and make the most of what we think on balance is a very good bill for owners. With that, Greg, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you take it from there.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you, Greg Avioli. Yes. And thank you, Greg Avioli, as well. Hello, everyone, and thanks for having us on the call today. I'm Greg Means with the Alpine Group in Washington, as Alex mentioned. I'm going to briefly kind of go through kind of how we scoped out the tax reform bill and kind of what our goals were and how we interacted on it. And then my colleague Lauren Basil will get into more details about individual provisions and some of their impacts and effects. When we first started out, you know, tax reform has been kicked around for many years as a goal of various decision makers, policymakers, elected officials in Washington, D.C. There have been various draft bills over the years. And finally, there was a harmonic convergence of the planets this year, which allowed a comprehensive tax reform bill to be passed by the Congress and signed into law to the president. Part of that harmonic convergence were the use of certain Senate rules, and I won't bore you with the details of all those things in reconciliation, which is the process that was used. But nevertheless, a process prevailed that allowed, in this case, for the GOP to move a comprehensive tax bill. We kind of started off first with, you know, some scoping exercises, you know, what may be in the bill, what could be harmful, what could be helpful. And we started talking to some of our friends up on Capitol Hill, both in the House and the Senate, and even in the White House, about some of the provisions that we had interest in, concerns about, et cetera. Similarly, we were talking to stakeholders in our industry about what was important to them, what concerns you, what are opportunities, and things like that, as well as with some tax advisors that are heavily involved in the equine industry so that we have a better understanding of what to be on the lookout for. Kind of our first goal through this process was, shall I call it a Hippocratic oath, was let's not allow or try not to allow anything into the bill that would be harmful. Let's do no harm. Let's not have any provisions that, as we have no DEFCON 1 provisions. As the bill was really getting put together and really started to accelerate, kind of in late September, then in really in October and November into December, we were able to, as different revisions were made and different proposals were offered, you know, we had our friends on Capitol Hill that we were working with to achieve that first goal that there's no big harm or there's no harm at all. And then after that, it was kind of looking at provisions and analyzing how they would impact our industry. And those provisions that we thought would be helpful to the industry, you know, we joined other voices to promote those pieces and those provisions in the bill. We also had to play some defense. Senator Flake of Arizona, Jeff Flake, Republican senator from Arizona, floated an amendment, and this was kind of late in the process of the Senate consideration of the bill, but he floated an amendment of which the language was specifically aimed at eliminating the ability to deduct gaming losses from gaming winnings. Obviously, that would not be helpful to our industry. To the contrary, it would be very harmful. So we had to spend some time making sure that we were able to get rid of that amendment. The amendment was never offered. We were able to secure enough support and enough support from influential members that Mr. Flake ultimately did not pursue that. So we were playing defense as well. There's one provision that was not included in the tax bill that we would have liked to have been included. That is, in some of this, basically is being replaced by the expensing provisions, which Lauren will talk about. But as folks on the call may recall, and this started in the 2008 Farm Bill when we were able to get language in that bill, that basically provided for a uniform and accelerated depreciation of thoroughbreds at 3 years. And prior to that, the rules are very confusing, and longer, in duration and not helpful. That has always been part of a package of a dozens of other so-called tax extenders that involve other energy programs and other things, including ours, that would expire from year to year or every couple of years, and we'd have to get them renewed. All those provisions did expire and were not renewed in 2017. They did not address those in tax reform. We wish that they would have, but they left all of those on the side due to some opposition and due to some scoring issues. Again, I won't get into that, but as to how, as far as dealing with how much the bill cost, and there were some limitations that they had to abide by. the good news is that a bill has been reintroduced by senior Republicans in the Senate that would carry on those extenders or extend those extenders again, and it would be retroactive to the beginning of 2017. At this point, we're not sure if that bill is going to pass. There are some problems with it over in the House. We're working to get that passed. So if we, you know, if there was something missing from tax reform for us, it was that. We believe that issue will be usurped by the expensing provisions, but those provisions do not take effect until 2018. I'm going to stop there because I think we want to get into more of the individual provisions and let Lauren kind of walk through those. I'm happy to come back and talk about kind of, you know, how tax reform moved along and what we did. But that was kind of a general idea of how we approached it, how we worked with our stakeholders, how we worked with allies on Capitol Hill to make sure that the bill actually ended up to be good for us, as there were some industries and some geographic areas on other provisions not related to the equine industry that did not fare so well. So with that, I will kick it to Lauren to kind of talk about some of the individual provisions.
Thanks, Greg. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Lauren Basil with the Alpine Group. And what I want to do this afternoon is really just hit a few of the high points that we think are most notable for the owners, and particularly the owners, you guys in California, the provisions that we think you may need to take a deeper dive into. And as Alex has said before, we did not design this to be a comprehensive look at the entire bill, and everyone is strongly encouraged to talk to their own tax advisor, because individual situations will differ, and the impact of the new law on your planning and certainly on how you file it for 2018 will also be different. And so we are waiting for IRS guidance on a lot of things that will also have an impact. So please just view this as kind of the hot 100 hit list of the things you should most pay attention to when looking at tax reform. First of all, is the reduction in overall tax rates. The individual income tax rates were reduced from a top rate of 39.6% to 37%, and the standard deductions was doubled for joint filers from $12,700 to $24,000. Obviously, the movement of the strike points in the individual tax rates means that for a married taxpayer filing jointly, they would hit the top marginal tax bracket at an income of taxable income of $600,000. So a lot of the top rates have moved up the scale, and that should give a lot of relief for people throughout. Also, the top corporate rate, if you're have a business that's a C corporation, was reduced to 21%. And that also should bring a lot of relief to folks in the business space, and was really kind of the main thrust of the tax bill overall, was the reduction in those overall rates. Now, in order to do that, in order to lower rates, they had to give up on some of the individual preference items that people were using already to bring down their tax liability. And so a lot of the individual itemized deductions have been repealed, with the exception of the deduction for charitable contributions and a limited deduction for mortgage interest, as well as a $10,000 capped deduction for state and local taxes. That the $10,000 cap on the state and local tax deduction, if in fact you still choose to itemize, that applies to all of your state and local taxes as an individual. So property taxes, income taxes, general state and local sales taxes if you're in a state and local sales tax state, real estate taxes. So that actually tends to be the most controversial item that we have picked up on the individual side, is the limitation on the personal state and local tax items. Obviously, by doubling the standard deduction, the goal of the bill was to have fewer people have to itemize. And so leaving even a limited deduction in there for property taxes, income taxes, charitable contributions. Clearly, your individual situation will determine whether or not the new higher standard deduction is preferable or whether you will still continue to be an itemizer. But it's important to note that in addition to by limiting the personal by limiting the other itemized deductions, things like unreimbursed business expenses, all will no longer be deductible. And so you should take a look at the list of other itemized deductions when you're determining whether or not to itemize or take the standard deduction. I'm going to pass over for right now the discussion of pass-throughs because that is a little bit complicated. But I will say that just looking through some of the other items of the bill, the capital gains tax rate has been retained at the same maximum 20% for qualified long-term capital gains and qualified dividends. It's also important to note that the new law did not change the Affordable Care Act 3.5% net investment income tax and the 0.9% additional Medicare tax that applies to higher income individuals. So those clearly still will be part of your calculation. moving on from the rates, I want to talk a little bit about the new deduction for qualified pass-through business income. As I said, this is one of the most complicated areas of the new law. In essence, what the law does is it provides a 20% deduction for qualified business income from a partnership, S corporation, or sole proprietorship. And so the 20% deduction combined with the top ordinary income tax rate would result in a top rate of about 29.6% for such income. Now here's where things get dicey. The definitions of income and the definitions of what type of businesses qualify still will have to be determined by regulation. In general, qualified businesses, specified service trader businesses are not allowed to take this deduction, but we don't believe that that applies to folks in the farming and owning businesses, but your tax advisor will have to know for sure, and certainly regulations hopefully will clarify that. The 20% deduction is not a deduction against your adjusted gross income, but is a deduction reducing your taxable income. Again, all these calculations need to be pretty specific and personal to you, but you will have to go through probably a complicated set of calculations, at least for this current year, and then going forward on how you plan as to whether or not it is advantageous for businesses to stay as pass-throughs or convert to C corporations and the like. The next item I wanted to just touch on is the charitable contribution to donation deduction. While the provisions of the charitable contribution deduction did not change, it is still allowed as an itemized deduction. As I noted earlier, the drop in the rates and the increase in the standard deduction has increasingly made people less likely to itemize, as well as the cap on the state and local deductions. So the charitable contribution deduction, while it is still there, clearly may not be as advantageous unless it is a very high deduction. So you would want to look at your charitable contributions and measure those against your income and certainly your other expenses and other potential deductions, again, when making the decision to itemize or not to itemize. The individual alternative minimum tax was also adjusted a bit. The increased exemption amount and phase-out thresholds so that you have an exemption amount increased to $109,400 for joint filers, and a phase-out threshold increased to $1 million for joint filers. As a result, between that and the elimination of a state and local tax deduction, the AMT is likely to hit fewer taxpayers. But again, individual situations may be different. Flipping now to a couple of the business items that are most of interest or may be most of interest to you, the 179 small business expensing provision was made permanent, and you can deduct $1 million of expenses up to a $2.5 million phase out for property, and both of those levels are indexed for inflation. As was mentioned before, You're now able to fully and immediately write off business investments through 2022. After 2022, the 100% expensing is reduced by 20% each year until it's fully eliminated in 2027. But importantly, unlike prior law, the new act expanded this expensing deduction to include used equipment, not just equipment that's purchased by the taxpayer for its first use. So that can be very meaningful, especially given the elimination of like-kind exchange deferral ability for anything other than real estate, other than real property. For folks that are making purchases in their business and using and borrowing to do it, the law limits the interest deduction for businesses that have more than $25 million of gross receipts by disallowing a deduction in excess of 30% of the business's adjustable taxable income. And so you have a limitation on your business interest expense deduction, but there is still one there. Net operating losses are still allowed to be carried back, but only for 2 years, not five. And NOLs can be carried forward indefinitely, but there's a limit on those of 80% of income. I know that there are a lot of provisions that Alex is going to speak about that have particular effect and are of particular interest to the owners and the breeders. And so I'm going to turn it over to Alex now to drill down a little bit more on the impact of some of the provisions and how they directly affect our industry. But clearly I'm available for questions, and we can do that after Alex is done.
Thank you, Lauren. What I want to do first is to highlight three small business provisions. Lauren has made reference to two of them, but they are things that are generally applicable to small businesses, but specifically will be helpful to owners, farm owners, breeders, and so it's important to pay attention to these and to bring these to the attention of your tax advisors. Number one on that hit list would be the 179 expense allowance that has been made permanent. It's been raised to 1 million threshold, up to 1 million with it is phased out after 2.5 million. This would apply to horses, to equipment, to improvements to real estate. All those things that you're now doing, probably if you own a farm or if you have horses in some form, the ownership form. So 179 expense allowance is important. It is permanent. It's something to keep in mind when talking to your advisor. The second, and it's related and somewhat overlapping, is the bonus depreciation, which is a little different than the expensing. But the beauty of the bonus depreciation is it's 100%. And it is not limited. So this is something you can immediately write off the cost of new and used property. That would, in case of owners, that would include yearlings and broodmares, new and used. And so we previously could only use that with respect to new equipment, personalty, horses, the yearlings, now broodmares as well. I know Keeneland was very focused on that, and buyers at Keeneland here in the last 4 days were focused on this bonus depreciation provision. So it's very helpful. Unfortunately, it does expire after the year 2022, but it's there and it's important. There's also another overlapping provision, but it's important to property owners, to farm owners. There is accelerated depreciation that's available for machinery and equipment. It was a 7-year depreciation schedule. Now it's been brought back to 5 years. That applies in specific situations. If you own a farm, there may be instances where you want to depreciate over 5 years. Certain machinery and equipment, you don't want to use the bonus depreciation provisions. Again, that's a practice pointer. Talk to your accountant or your lawyers. They'll know where the utilization of this is important. There's an overall point here that we need to make as well. We're talking about federal taxes. In California, you have you are a conformity state in a limited sense. By that I mean that in California, the state law is typically tied to the federal law for a variety of different issues. But in California, that only happens by a vote of the legislature. And as of today, the legislature has not taken action on the 2018 tax reform package. Currently, the conformity language in your state, in California, relates to January 1, 2015. So you're going to have to keep two separate sets of tax books because of the differences between federal and state tax law. There are hearings now that are ongoing in Sacramento that you should be aware of. They're talking about updating the tax laws to conform to the 2018 tax reform measure. We don't know what the outcome of those are. They're ongoing, and the results of those are uncertain. But I would urge you to engage. Currently, the three provisions that I just outlined for you, 179 expensing, bonus depreciation, and accelerated depreciation for farm property, they are exempt from the current conformity language. It's possible that they will continue to be exempt even if the conformity language comes into place effective 2018. So you need to watch those things. Those are important provisions for horse owners, and I would argue strongly to keep those in the conformity package if and when it happens in California. But until that time, at the state level, you're going to be dealing with very different state law provisions as it relates to the expensing depreciation and the accelerated depreciation for our farm property. That's a complicated area. You need to talk to your tax advisors, but you've got a difference between state and federal taxation, which it's going to take a while to fix that. Quickly, as it relates to the taxation of pass-through entities, we use a lot of tax pass-through entities in horse racing. People buy horses, and sometimes big horses are put into separate LLCs or other sub-S corps. There are a variety of different ways that they hold property. Structuring is critical. There's no way I can tell you how to structure your entity because I don't know it. You need to engage your tax professional quickly to talk about how you have structured your ownership interests to make sure you're taking advantage of this pass-through taxation. And while you're at it, consider going away from pass-through. Consider going back to the standard C corporation, because in the old days you wanted to get away from a C corporation because it had a 35% tax rate. You had to deal with double taxation. But now at 21%, the C corp may be the preferred way for you to own horses. I can't tell you if that's the case in all cases, but it's certainly worth considering. So talk to your advisors, see if there's a possibility. Ask the question, should we go to a C-Corp? Can we save her overall? To some extent, it depends upon how much you're able to take advantage of the pass-through entity rules, the 20% deduction, which is phased out after in certain very profitable partnerships. So be mindful of that and talk to your tax advisors about pass-through entities versus C-Corp. It may be a different strategy that you want to take on from here going forward. Lauren mentioned the loss of the like-kind exchange. It's unfortunate because that was utilized frequently in our industry. I know of transactions that occurred where you would exchange horses and you would, in effect, defer gain. You do that because Thoroughbred, or any horse, has a 2-year holding period for capital gains treatment. We tried our best to get that reduced to 1, like other investment assets, and we were unsuccessful. So the lack of that, the continuation of the 2-year depreciation, the 2-year capital gains treatment, and the removal of the like-kind exchange is it's frustrating. It's not the best, but be aware of that because like-kind exchange is gone. Lauren talked about net operating losses. They are limited, but there is a 2-year look back for farming operations. That's important. If you've got a farm or if you can take advantage of that, being able to look back and grab some taxes that you paid in prior years by using a net operating loss carryback, that's very valuable, and your tax advisor will tell you that. So look out for ways in which to take advantage of NOLs that are going to be denied to others who don't have farming operations. One other thing to keep in mind is the estate estate tax exemption has been doubled. In fact, more than doubled. It's almost $11 million for couples at this point in time. If there are family farms out there in California that are valuable, and I'm certain that there are, that is going to help do some transition planning, maybe some generational planning that wasn't possible under the prior rule. So that estate tax exemption being doubled is very good. Last one issue that we worked out was the wagering loss deduction. You still, if you're a horse player, you can still deduct all of your losses up to the amount of your winnings. And that that's an important provision because it helps to limit the amount of reportable income that horse players may incur. One thing that did occur in this bill that we tried to stop, we were not successful in stopping it, if you're a professional gambler, if you're someone in the trader business of wagering on horse racing, and that's, there are not many people who fit that definition, but if you are one of those people, prior to Jan 1, you were able to deduct not only your losing wagers, but also any other trader business expenses, normal businesses like lodging, transportation costs, over and above the limit on your winnings. And that was a, you know, it was a good provision that some people took advantage of. That's gone. Now, the deduction is capped at winnings. And so you can't take any deductions more than your winnings. So that is, the good news is you still can deduct winnings against losses against winnings. But if you're in the active, if you're in the trader business, you're limited to winnings. And that's something that those people who do that sort of thing are very, very well aware of that change. It actually impacted more casino gaming than it did horse racing. Nonetheless, we were aware of it and we fought to push back on it. That, that ends my list of things that I wanted to sort of bring your attention to. And with that, I want to thank you all for your participation and for your patience in listening to this. I know some of this is very technical information, but we are here to answer your questions to the extent that we can. And I'm going to stop there and turn it back to Jim Mulvihill. Jim, and we'll just start the question and answer period.
All right. Thank you so much, Alex, and thank you also to Lauren. We greatly appreciate both of you kind of wading through this bill over the last couple months and helping us all to understand these most relevant points. We do have time now for some questions. Lisa, the operator, will tell you in a second how to signal if you do have a question for either Alex or Lauren. But again, I do just want to remind everybody, these two can't give you guidance on your specific taxes, but again, they're happy to help you understand the law and the issues that you need to be looking at. So with that, I'll ask Lisa to give you the instructions on how to prompt for a question.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute option is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, everyone, that is star 1 to ask a question. Also, please limit yourself to one question, and if time permits, you may requeue for follow-up questions. We'll pause for a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal, and again, that is star 1. And we have a question from Nick Alexander. Please go ahead.
I was under the impression that the new tax law affects 2018, but earlier in the presentation said 17. Did he misspeak or am I wrong?
This is Lauren. For the most part, the provisions in the new law take effect, you know, 1/1/18. They're clearly, I think what you might have been referencing is Greg's discussion of the 3-year horse depreciation, which kind of is still hanging out there. As you know, that provision expired at the end of 2016, so 2017 is still kind of in limbo. We're trying to restore that provision for effective for 2017, and so that might have been where the confusion is. And obviously there are some provisions, for example, with respect to the 100% expensing provision, there is a an effective date for transition rule for property acquired before September 28th, 2017 and placed in service after September 27th, 2017. So they did try to take into effect decisions that people were making while the bill was actively going through the process. And those are, there are a couple of instances like that where there could be a 2017 effect on a particular provision.
Great. Thank you.
As a reminder, everyone, that is star one to ask a question or make a comment. We have a question from Lindsay LaRoche with Highland Yard.
Hi, thank you for the overview. I'm wondering if any changes were implemented regarding the hobby law, and if not, any thoughts you have on the current sort of standing of that law. Thank you.
Lauren, let me speak first to that, and you can follow up. The short answer is no. The hobby law issues were remain. This notion, the distinction between active and passive activity, remains in the business, and all of the case law that's built up around that remains. The one difference that may have impact here is that there are certain instances where passive activity can get the benefit of the 20% deduction if you're doing business through a pass-through entity. So it's generally speaking, all of these provisions that we discussed today are available to those who are in the active trader business of owning, racing, breeding horses. They're not available to the passive investor, with one exception, and I think that's the exception where you're doing business to a pass-through entity, and in that case, there is the ability to get the benefit of the 20% deduction under those limited circumstances where that applies.
And the only thing I would add to what Alex said is to be very mindful as we watch for Treasury guidance implementing all of the specific provisions of the law, in particular the pass-through rules, because I think a lot of the interplay between the passive loss rules and the new pass-through deduction will also be addressed potentially in regulation. So before making any major leaps one way or the other, you're going to want to keep an eye out for Treasury interpretive guidance just to be sure that you're reading the law and your advisors are reading the law the same way the Treasury Department is interpreting it.
Once again, very everyone, good. That is star one.
Alex,
and there are
Greg,
no further questions at this time.
Pardon me, Greg? Excuse me, ma'am.
Yes, Greg. Can you comment a little bit more? I was confused on your statement about the California law recognizing the federal law. Are you talking about state taxes, or are you talking about basically California recognizing federal, just state taxes? Okay.
No, just state taxes. You have federal taxes. They'll be... Your federal tax forms will all be governed by the federal law, the new tax reform bill. But when you go to fill out your state taxes on your state forms, they will have different provisions. And many of the expensing, 179 expensing, bonus depreciation, farm property accelerated depreciation will not be available to you as on your state form as you file your state tax form.
Pending the outcome of whatever bill gets passed in Sacramento.
Precisely, and whatever they're doing in Sacramento, I'd urge you guys to get involved because they're talking about this. I'm sure there's going to be a whole new discussion about, you know, why are we not a conformity state across the board, because all these provisions are good for small business and certainly for horse industry.
Got it. Thank you.
As a reminder, everyone, that is star one to ask a question or make a comment, and we'll pause for a moment. And there are no further questions at this time. I'd like to turn the conference back over to Mr. Mulvihill for any additional or closing comments.
All right. I just want to give thanks again to Greg Avioli, Alex Waldrip, Greg Means, and Laurel Basil for lending their expertise today, and to the TOC and the NTRA for presenting this call. Thank you, everybody, for participating. If you have any follow-up questions, especially on policy, we encourage you to reach out to the NTRA's Government Affairs Office. If we don't know the answer, we almost certainly know where to point you. Thanks again for joining us, and back to Lisa now to end the call.
Thank you, sir. And that does conclude today's presentation. Thank you for your participation, and you may now disconnect.